Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. This podcast is for you if you have an insane drive to find the truth of things. It's not the good answers that we seek, but the good questions. I interview a range of different guests from many different fields, all with the intention to uncover the simple truths that are hidden in plain sight. Most people don't want to go there. I go there. My guests go there, and you benefit. Please let me know if you enjoy these episodes, and as always, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. I've got Trent, the CEO and founder of Holium here, and very excited to talk about a whole range of things. We talked again a month ago. I was too sick to record, but we ended up talking about a whole bunch of different stuff about corporate culture, quantum computing, the different changes in the way that we perceive time, the Mr. Smith, Jungian stuff. We're going to go deep into all that stuff and distributed AI. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, it seems like a small menu of ideas to go through.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's like, we're creating a deck, and it's like, let's put all of the buzzwords in the deck. Yeah. Let's pitch them on. Okay, quantum computing, check. You know, temporal computing, whatever that means. Sure, that sounds great. You know, corporate culture. Nah. Yeah. What's the next corporate culture?
And let's go into that, because let's go into corporate culture and corporations. And what do you think AI is going to do to corporations?
I think that they'll be used while they're effective by sort of the let's just say the AGI system from the future creating itself. But I mean, my idea is that eventually there's going to be more effective ways to distribute capital to increase the value of the market, or in this case, this like the AI itself. Because I do think that one thing that I was sort of thinking about recently is this idea that if you think about what the markets are for, right, it's you're effectively allocating resources effectively, and once you have like this AGI system that has like all this compute behind it, really it could end up being more effective than the market. It might need that as like a data source for a time, but in a similar way to how like, you know, all the human creativity that has found its way on the internet has been trained into these models, and now it can generate anything. Like I was playing with Midjourney's version 6 update, and these are really like it's almost amazing how detailed you can get things, and how like, you know, find on art station or like Behance or these design sites. But in a similar way, I think it's like all of this is just data that's going to be trained into the system, and then the system will be more effective at, you know, doing things. But obviously with input of the human. So like in the case of like Midjourney, you're like doing the things, like you're trying to get to do what you want to do. And it's not always perfect. That's why, like, when you do you generate an image, there's 4 options there. And then you like decide which direction you want to go. But I think in the similar sort of way, like all of the data that's coming from the markets, all the data on the internet can all be bound together and sort of like, perhaps even create a more effective way or system to distribute capital. And so really, like, I see the markets being replaced by sort of like cooperative AIs working together. And maybe it's not even like, you don't even think about it in that way, but yeah, that's like a whole tangent to get down. But really the corporate culture right now, I think that it's going to get disrupted. And really, I think it will be disrupted by really like AI and crypto being tied together in a way that we kind of have seen with Bitcoin, right? So the GPUs are like now distributed, or they've been consolidated. You know, there's like a lot of these like mining companies that have sort of, you know, built these large operations now. So even though it was like decentralized in some capacity before, now it's sort of like a little bit kind of like, you know, federated maybe. But I think the same thing's going to happen sort of with this sort of next phase of like what's going to go on with AI is I think that it's going to be corporate AIs against the decentralized AI systems.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the battleground.
And do you think
whichever one's better at predicting, you know, the future effectively or allocating capital when?
Interesting. And do you think corporations over 150 people will become a weakness? And this is, that's kind of a leading question because obviously that's what I believe. But I guess, do you agree or do you disagree or what are your nuanced thoughts on getting above 150 people? What do you think about that?
I think it's a byproduct of like the industrial era where we didn't have the information systems that we had today. Like we couldn't source information like pretty much instantly from, you know, all these different sources of like information, like Wikipedia. Wikipedia is not the best in all cases, but it's got a lot on there. But the point being is that these big, large organizations were built mainly to like efficiently transmit information.
Yes.
So that they can like react and sort of like, you know, allocate resources within themselves properly. So I think if you have a system like in the future, or even now, I think now you can see this with startups, right? Like startups that are smaller move faster. The bigger you get, sort of almost like the more bloat that gets introduced into the system. So I think there is an ineffectiveness that happens at a certain scale that if you can build another coordinating like, you know, strategy, would actually be more effective. And this is where like, there's a series of ideas I was playing around with years ago of like, okay, you've got, you know, artificial intelligence, which I kind of saw as the data center AI. And then there's something that I kind of referred to as collective intelligence. And what that was more so about was being able to source from an individual expert human, like as quickly as possible, information that's relevant to a decision that you're making. Mm. And like, if you can get that, but then there's also the thing of like, that person has to load the context of, you know, might have to like adapt the way they present the information based on some context. So it's like, there's like this latency there that is challenging, I think. But it's in its language constrained, meaning like, you know, I've got to use words to tell you what I'm, you know, trying to achieve. But I think if we can sort of figure out a better way to do that coordination, then I think you wouldn't really need to have these large organizations. Mm. And you could do a lot with very small teams. Mm. And that might be the future of AI. I think the company that builds the AGI system is actually going to be probably very small.
Yeah. Interesting. What do you think is the, you know, beyond the AGI, beyond AI, what is the essence of coordination? Why does it exist? And what are the inputs?
Yeah. So interesting, because this is something else I was kind of pondering recently, which is really this idea of the meme of the sort of like self-replicating gene or whatever however you want to phrase it. It's really, there's something about life where like sharing or extending is baked into it, right? And so, you know, at the beginning, social animals ended up faring better than, you know, animals that were like, if the human or like the Neanderthal just like walked off on his own, he could get wrecked much more easily than if he had like his crew with him, mm-hmm. right? So I think that was selected for over time. And beyond that, it's like, you know, I think we've talked about this before, but there's like another selection process where like, you know, being able to understand interactions was selected for as well. And the little fun analogy I use is like the cavemen who didn't understand the paintings on the wall mapped to these like physical creatures out there. And like, you know, the pointy thing that the guy was holding maps to, you know, a sharpened spear or something. Like the people that could reason in that abstract way were able to like learn when like their buddy got eaten. Oh wait, that was that thing on the wall. That stick figure was, you know, the stick figure getting eaten on the wall is now my buddy. Oh man, like where's that pointy stick, you know? And then he runs back to the cave and like carves out a spear, right? So like information is like the basis of life in a weird way, or like sharing information is kind of how life exists.
Mm.
And it's almost like the amount of compute comes from the amount of information processing, but also like how much sampling you've had of the known space that you're operating in.
Mm.
Right. And so over time, as like, you know, tribal or like, you know, these like migratory groups, they got effective at managing themselves at that scale. Right. And then over time, we had to get more sophisticated cultural technology to build like larger organizations of information transfer. Or like, it's, you know, I'm convincing you that I'm not going to kill you, but also like we're going to work together in these ways. And there's all this sort of like information flowing back and forth. But really, at the end of the day, it's that, you know, I can trust these other parties to do what they say they're going to do, so I'll survive. Because otherwise, it's like you're going to be like the selfish, the selfish lone wolf guy. And so I think sharing and like coordination, collaboration is like effectively the way in which life works in some way. Like there's some foundational piece of it of like, yeah, there's like information accumulation, maybe, is like this fundamental thing. And if you think about like what like if you fast forward to like, you know, social media, or like maybe we could go back to like the printing press, right? So that effectively created this environment where, you know, you could print books, smaller scale people can print books, because before it was like, you know, we had to like manually write these books of the Bible, which the priests can, you know, speak to the people, but then like we could print the Bible and then we just put it out there and people could start coming up with their own ideas around it and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, like you could put your ideas out there if you could, you know, raise enough money to print the books. So then you have like this information sharing that happens. And what you'll realize, if you look at that chart that they always show of like, you know, whatever GDP over time, like it literally is 100% mapped to obviously in the information technology breakthroughs, right? So as more, you know, as a printing press was sort of like created or invented and books were being spread around, you effectively had like so many different minds parsing this information and then like generating new information, that it sort of like created this environment where now people, as well as the social environment, were like, okay, there were countries that were like peacefully aligned. You would go and like talk at their seminars, you know, their universities, they'd come to yours. And so there's this cross-pollination of information that was going on. And I think that it's just like the inherent, you know, foundational element of life. And if you go into the future and look at AI and sort of look at the attention is all you need paper and even just like, you know, what you know, how transformers work and things,
mm-hmm.
really what it's all about is it's the information you put on the internet. So we put all this information on the internet, which effectively created this new era of like, you know, colliding ideas. Because like I was watching this documentary about, it was like some religious group, one of these like evangelical ones, and it was like the 80s or something, right? And like back in the day, it was like you had the public access television, you had these other forms of getting that information out. And that was like how these like fringe groups would operate, is like they would get the information out in whatever way they could. But it was like happening at a very slow pace, or it would take generations for like them to recruit enough people for their religion, right? Because you're bounded by like your location, or like, you know, public access TV just came around like, you know, fairly recently, like probably in like 60s, 70s. Or more like 70s. So it was like you had to wait generations for like your ideas to sort of spread. Whereas now with the internet, you know, your idea can spread instantly. You can be just one guy. And so that's another interesting aspect of this, is that Now that that happened, effectively, all of these like fringe groups sort of like, it's harder to get people to believe in these ideas, because part of it is like isolating them from information, right? It's like what all good cults or sort of like movements do is you don't want to look at the information, you know, outside of this idea space, because it's dangerous. Yeah. And it will take you away. But because we're seeing all this information, it's like, and I, you know, you can look everything up online now and see, you know, for me, like mainstream news became totally demystified or totally like irrelevant.
Yeah.
Over, I would say the real catalyst was probably COVID for me. And that, like, that's when I realized, well, I could just go and get the raw information from like Twitter at the time, or like from wherever.
And I imagine that you found out about it probably late 2019, early January 2020, because you were on Twitter. Am I right in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, exactly. And then everybody else for 2 months was like, oh, this is just one of those other things. The media was like, oh, it's just one of those other things. And then there was that crazy switch in March where it was like a light switch where all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, now we're paying attention to what's going on in Twitter. There's a whole bunch of stuff about that. But basically, Twitter gave everybody an edge 3 months. I have a particular unique outlook on that specific thing. I think it's because someone created fake videos of people dying in the street in China. And, you know, from my understanding, COVID doesn't kill people in the street. It kills people in hospitals.
Yeah.
So was it
hyperstitionally created?
Interesting. I don't know.
I'll save that. We'll earmark that for a future, for like later in the conversation. But
sure.
But no, it is interesting to think about, because the velocity of information, and interestingly enough, like I had this whole thing, and if I look through my notes, I wrote a lot of kind of like concepts around the velocity of ideas and being like, this is something that I believe with like startups and like teams, is that like lowering or increasing the velocity of ideas and lowering like all of these sort of like walls that would be created, whether it's like a tool that's like janky or something, like lowering that barrier and like increasing the velocity of information effectively is like the way to be more effective as an organization. So think about it in terms of velocity of ideas or velocity of information. Maybe that's like the actual base metric of like life or intelligence or something is like the velocity of information, because that's what you get now on Twitter, is that there's like so much information. So the algorithm is kind of tuning it for you, but you could go to an account that's just like posting raw videos from like wherever in the world. And then you can sort of like, okay, I'm seeing how I'm seeing directly from like someone's cell phone camera that this is what's going on. Yeah. And you don't really need this sense making be given down to you in the same way that, like, you know, I think it's the same sort of thing. Like these older institutions are kind of like, if like they're like corporations today in a way, and that we're going to get to a point where you no longer need a corporation to have like this high velocity of information and ideas that can be coordinated.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And so really when you think about like corporate structure in relation to the velocity of ideas, then that's when you can start kind of not thinking about like, how long will corporations last? It's more so like, how do we increase the velocity of information, you know, such that corporations are irrelevant, or they're no longer sort of like competitive, because this new form has been built. I don't think it's DAOs. DAOs are very like, it might be even like it's pretty much like politics when you get into a real DAO, where it's like just a lot of effort. And maybe this is where it gets to like the AI angle, is that, so now we have all this information flowing around on the internet, right? So that information, you know, to the right people, you can like feed it into your mind and understand things in ways that, you know, people that are getting their information filtered through like mainstream media, they're not getting an understanding like you are, but there's like a capacity to what you can do. So then it's like with a, you know, what LLMs do effectively is it takes all of that information. So hundreds, millions, trillions of pieces of text, trains on it. And all it's doing is trying to predict the next token in like a chain.
Yeah.
And so really, if you think about it, like one framing in terms of like IQ that I really sort of, once I read that, I was like, man, this all makes sense now. Was that, you know, when I was a kid, I was always like, you know, oh, if you put your mind to things, you know, anyone can do anything.
Yeah.
And then sort of as I got into like understanding intelligence in a more nuanced way, I realized, yeah, there's like literally levels of perception that get unlocked at different scales of IQ, right? Yeah. But it's like, if you're like, you know, 70 IQ, you might not be able to abstractly reason about, you know, people and like get out of this sort of like the now, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost like intelligence has lifted us out of the now. And at like lower like IQ levels, you're sort of like in the now.
Yeah.
And you can probably do a little bit of future thinking and like simulation, but it's like as you go up, you can then do things like, you know, engage in the theory of mind where you're like simulating other agents or other people and how they're going to react and what they're going to do. And like, as it goes higher, you can like simulate much more higher level abstractions of systems and how they will like work. And so, you know, think about like the AI angle is like, you're ingesting all this information and you're like, whatever, you're like a GigaChad 180 IQ guy. And you're just like processed all the information you think you can process, but then you're sort of like still capped, right? Yeah. So really what you're doing when you have like large language models get trained, is that you're taking the entirety of human output that's been created. I mean, not all of it. This is not all the information was trained into the system, but effectively, you know, a large portion of the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you get though is you get all of this sort of synthesis of all of the intelligence, you know, in the world over time. And now it's trained into the system. And so really, if you think about it, it's like, if like the 70 IQ person is like stuck in the now in terms of how they're reasoning, this like, you know, billion IQ sort of super AI can predict much further in the future and, you know, consider much more like complex maps of power dynamics and things like that and like future scenarios. So it can effectively out-simulate you by, you know, exponentially higher numbers, right? And so this is kind of like this thing when it gets to coordination information sharing. It's like, why is it that humans just want to share? Like, what? Why is it that I'm sitting here and I'm just telling you all of this for free, right? Mm-hmm. It's like back in the day, it's like, well, I should, you know, start a company and do something with it. I don't know. Or it's like, you know, I'm going to use it as a weapon. We're going to build an AI and like wreck you. But it's like now we've tended to get to this point where we're all cooperating and sharing ideas and trying to effectively, you know, bring this higher level of coordination into existence. And that's why I say that like AI is the next iteration of the market, is that you really won't need the market in the way it operates today when you have this system that's effectively able to play everyone's game in terms of the stock market. And people are like, man, it's stock market's so complex. There's no way it's going to be able to like, you know, do anything and simulate it. And it's like, bro, it's like once we unlock some quantum AI stuff, it's like you're playing a whole different game.
Yeah.
So then it's like, how do humans organize around this future? Is a thing I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And so that's where it's, you know, there's a whole tangent to get down, but I'll kind of wrap up the trail of thought there.
It's very interesting. We could go back to the sort of caveman being able to abstractly represent the images that he's seen, because it's been something I've been thinking about before we started recording. We talked about the Plato theory of forms type of thing, and the fact that we can abstractly represent our world. And not just that we can do it, but that's actually the rule, is that even when we're looking through our senses, it's not really that we're looking and seeing clearly through our senses. We're looking at an image that our brain has created that's directly, you know, related to everything we've ever consumed, similar to the LLM.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the idea of the meme and the information sharing, because the information sharing goes back to not only in humans and not only in social animals, it's also in DNA. It's also like the fundamental aspect of life is that mm-hmm. it, you know, you have these an organism with its DNA inside the cells, and then there are multiple cells, and then the cells are sending various different things, whether there's neurotransmitters all around and communicating with its outside world, and whether to see something is whether it's prey or food or a friend. So yeah, information seems very, and it ties into cybernetics. We've down here in Buenos Aires, you're welcome to come down here. Anybody listening is welcome to come down here. We're doing these, we're meeting up with some urban guys doing Saturday morning philosophy meetups at coffee shops. Last time we were there, it felt like I was in the middle of 1920s Paris. It's pretty cool. And so yeah, the philosophy sharing, and we're just sharing ideas with each other. We're coordinating a lot more. And before Silicon Valley took over in terms of the meme sphere, before it really started to bring a lot of weight, before that happened, you know, if you went to New York finance, 1950s, 1960s, Detroit, people starting companies, they wouldn't share the information outside of the companies. And then Silicon Valley came up, and then all of a sudden you had CEOs of companies that were still competing with each other, but they would sit down to get coffee and share some stuff. And it's really interesting. Now the internet's taken over, and now everybody's sharing all the time. Too much sharing going on.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's kind of just recapped what you were saying with some more thoughts on it. Anything else to talk about there?
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces that you hit, but really, like, the one thing that was interesting to me is that like, really, when you look at, you know, there's like these narratives that I see floating around of like, oh, San Francisco was like great. Now it, you know, now the fall of San Francisco. Now it's like, oh, now we're coming back.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's like this arc that's going through. But really, when you think about what San Francisco was, and even think about where, and this gets into some, like, we might have talked about this. To be honest, I don't remember exactly all the details we went into last time, but it's like the West Coast was the only place that Silicon Valley could be built.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons was, you know, the sort of, you know, military experimentation with psychedelics for beating Russians in the Cold War. And sort of that sort of dripped out into, you know, whatever. A lot of, there's like some of the key figures from the Bell Labs crew, the ones that like envisioned, you know, the mouse and the GUI and all these things like way back in the day. These guys all were, you know, they're working with, you know, military in different capacities. And several of these teams were involved in peyote experiments. And I think that there's, well, right. It seems funny, but it's like, really what it did was, like, it, from what I understand about, you know, psychedelics and everything is it's like, it destroys the sense of self in a way. Right. Yeah. Or it's sort of like, you know, makes it like takes that out of the equation for a time, and it literally rewires your brain for a period of time. You can like rewire it to be the old way, but, you know, usually when people start doing those things, they do it regularly.
Yeah.
But the point being is that San Francisco, very, very oversharing in terms of like everyone sharing ideas all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And so it really took like the West Coast, like the New York types, you know, there's no information sharing unless they're like, you know, it's good for my bank or it's good for my
transactional.
My firm.
Transactional.
It's transactional. But over there is more so like
transformational.
And it's interesting because now the biggest companies and the most valuable companies are all tech companies from Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And so then it kind of proves the sharing information
as strategy.
Yeah, like high velocity of ideas and information will beat any established institutions over time. And that's why it's like, I see when you question corporations, it's like, I think the corporations that work as openly as possible will end up being the ones that succeed. I think that all of the Web2 silo businesses, where like all of your data is living on their platform, they will all be killed. They're all going to die soon. And it's because their business model is built on like constraining access to that information.
Yeah.
And once you have systems that are incentivizing people with money to provide that information for free, or not for free, but like instead of doing it for free,
yeah,
like you're doing it on these other platforms, then it's going to go real fast. And really it just goes down to the more information that you're sharing, the more successful you're going to end up being.
And that brings into mind the thing that drew us together is essentially distributed computing and as the necessity for that to come about, because the current internet has turned into a Frankenstein. Whereas in the 1990s, it was all open. You could go to the blog posts, everybody was sharing information. And then starting in 2006, one particular company started to build walls around their silo of the internet. And then you had Google doing the same thing. And you have all and now it's like most people on the internet spend most of their time stuck in these silos. And that's all because of the client server architecture, where you have the server inside of Facebook's data centers and then serving it to the clients, and then them needing to a business model that will pay for all those servers or to pay for all the cloud computing. And now it's all going to go crazy cheap. It's all going to get really cheap. It's all going to get really fast, and it's all going to be coordinated, like you've been saying, using AI. But we need a new form of computing we could ask that question. Do we need a new form of computing, or can we build on top of this internet? What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think instead of it being that it's a client server model itself that we experience today, it's more so that the inability for that to scale create the environment. Because it, like, the client server model worked in the 90s great.
Yeah.
Right. Like you could serve up the blogs, you know, you got a server, you hosted like some WordPress blog site, or I don't know what they were doing in the 90s.
Yeah.
I don't know when WordPress was built, but you know what I mean? Yeah. There's like some like forum, like code that you could buy, and then you would spin it up on a server and you'd serve it up. But then like, you know, once we started getting to, you know, a billion people accessing the internet, or you know, 500 million even, they're like, oh shit, like we're gonna have to like build these data centers and stuff. So then you start doing that because the technology itself wasn't built for that scale.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can ever build something that will scale perfectly to some final state, unless maybe there's like some AI that's guiding it, that is like seeing things from this like temporal horizon that we are not able to fathom.
Yeah. Interesting.
And this is where like, it's, you know, there's like all these like kind of like meme-y companies like 2188 and stuff, where it's like, it's all like hyperstitutionally created, or it's like, bro, like, you know, the AI was sending back, it made Bitcoin to like distribute GPUs so it could build itself or something. You know, like those ideas are interesting to me because like, yeah. And if you think about it, it's almost like, it's not that this thing from the future is like sending back information in time. It's more so that there's this natural force of like information, you know, expansion that is like inherent in everything. So like we're fueled by it, you know, an intelligent, you know, system that we build will be fueled by that same sort of like force, underlying force.
A principle of the universe.
Yeah. So it's like, it's almost like that force is going to, it's not like there's this entity in the future. It's like this force is like just drawing out this curve, and we're like at this one point of the curve. And the idea is, well, how can you maximize or increase the velocity within your span of life so that you can get more of the rewards of this future state? This is where I think the accelerationists are thinking of things. But there's also the risk of like not considering the resilience factor, meaning we're at this like critical point where this stuff is all getting birthed. And if you sort of like don't consider all of the potential contingencies of how the system could like fall apart. And like if we become reliant on it and it like, you know, we have a solar flare that like wipes out all surface, you know, digital instruments, and we're just screwed. Like we're it's over. Like humanity will like go back to the Stone Age. So it's like, I think any system like this that would be created needs to think in terms of resilience instead of like efficiency or sort of like exponentials in this sort of like blowout kind of way. It's like, you know, we're going to exponentially scale and we're, everything's going to change so fast that the velocity of change is just, you know, it's almost like, you know, there's too many G forces for your mind to like continue. Therefore, like people just turn crazy and, you know, all these cults form that are anti-AI and this like massive terrorists, like campaigns for like, you know, whatever, killing AI technicians and all this kind of crazy shit would unfold. And it's because like, we're like moving too fast and like people are going insane.
Yeah.
So I think there's like this balance that needs to be had between the speed and like effectively how you build a system that can maintain stability over the longest period of time. And that's where I think going back to the market itself, or like the market, I think is fairly intelligent for being able to do this in terms of like how, you know, like you'll have companies that will individually like, you know, strip mine a certain region, but then like that can cannibalize as their business because like, oh fuck, we've run out of this one and now we have to go find other ones. Or like they've like extracted all the resources in this area, or like they chemically dumped stuff into a river and they're banned from like, you know, that facility's banned. And so there's like negative consequences that get applied to these people. And so there's a little correction, but it's all about like how fast this explosion of like, you know, change happens and how quickly we can make sure those like externalities or those like, you know, pieces that could destabilize things don't sort of impact the long-term viability of, you know, human civilization. And I think that's my whole nuance around EOC is that I think we should be accelerating, but I think we should be accelerating to a resilient system instead of like accelerating for the sake of accelerating, because you can accelerate like if you're on a roller coaster and you push that roller coaster too fast, like you can literally like the wheels can come off, or like you can like detach and just like die, right? And we don't want that. So it's like, how can you like push it to the limits until you can like build a better roller coaster or something?
And it reminds me of essentially like when I was growing up in Silicon Valley, the dominant theology, I'd say, is that, you know, all these problems that we're experiencing, and this was before microplastics, this was before the awareness that microplastics were everywhere and all this other stuff, that, you know, technology will fix it. Don't worry about your health. Technology will fix it. It'll fix it. And then, you know, 10 years later, 20 years later, start reading about microplastics fucking everywhere. They're all in the water. You know, that's like totally, totally polluted. Who knows what else is polluted? All these corporations putting crazy shit inside of everything that we consume. And it's all like, oh, are we sure technology is going to fix that? Like, how can we be sure of that? It definitely is going to do a lot of things. But then every time you make a new technology to fix it, there are all these other unintended side effects. And yeah, I bet, you know, like I always think about methylphenidate, and methylphenidate is Ritalin. And it's supposedly very healthy, or not. It's supposedly very less risk because it's been around for a really long time. People have used it and have, you know, like not had major adverse health effects, and that we can measure. And it always comes down to that we can measure as well. And it just it's so naive. And I think before we started recording, we were talking about naivete and how like, you know, children can be very naive, and then adults can be very naive as well. And it does seem like consciousness has this sort of childlike aspect to it that just kind of believes whatever it hears, if it sounds like a good idea. And generally, a lot of the ideas that sound really good aren't that great. What do you think about all that?
I mean, I think in terms of like the kid analogy or like consciousness, if you think about the example you gave of like the naivety. What is naivety? It's like a lack of information effectively, or it's like belief in lieu of information.
Yeah. Interesting.
And so it's all about like, I guess, precision. Cause you can be, it's almost like the bell curve meme in an interesting way, where like the one on the guy on the left, like the redneck or something, he's like naive, but he believes this
right thing.
He believes like, he believes the right thing. Yeah. And then you've got like the mid, and the mid's like, you know, they don't believe the thing. And they're like effectively weighed down from like decision fatigue because they can't parse all the information and understand it. And reason, and therefore they defer to like, you know, other people with higher IQs. But then what you get on the right side of the curve is that, you know, you have these people that can sort of like map out the complexities in their head, but then they also know they can't like, you can't like innately measure these data points in a way that sort of like, you can like do a proof to solve for in like these complex systems. You can like, you know, throw out theories and stuff. So really what they end up having to do is they have to kind of like go back to some intuitive, it's like vibes. That's maybe like, honestly, it's like, I like the word vibes. It's really like vibes is everything, but it's that, you know, maybe it's like on the left side of the bell curve because they don't really have like, it's almost like he's happy to believe like anything. Or like he's like, he doesn't need to understand everything to have a happy life or something like that. That he's just like vibes, bro. Like he's like, oh, that's like, I like Trump vibes or something. And then on the right side of the curve, you know, people might be thinking like, oh, I want, you know, some like asymmetric candidate coming in and like changing the game. That could be interesting. And in the mid, it's just like CNN said, blah, 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 you know? So there's like different ways of like perceiving it across the board, but it is just vibes at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Of like, we need, it's like on the left, it's like, we, in the Trump example, we needed change. We need something to change.
Yeah.
And then on the right, it's like, we need something to change. In the middle, whatever. But the point being is it's vibes. And really what I see is like, do you get your vibes from like yourself or from like, you know, a distributed group of people? Like maybe left side, you'll be getting it from like a pastor or like a set of people that you listen to. In the middle, you're sort of like, I don't know, whatever the mainstream is. And then on the right, you're like building your own intuition about something and then finding the smartest people to talk about things with, which is kind of like what you were doing down there in Buenos Aires. Which honestly, I think South and Central America are going to be the sort of like Renaissance regions for like the next era in terms of like network state stuff. But getting back to like the consciousness thing and like, yeah, I just think it's like, we have to make sure that whenever these things get created, that it gets created in alignment with humans. And so that's kind of like why decentralized AI, especially recently, has gotten to be much more of a, you know, important topic in my mind, is that we have to effectively build better systems in a decentralized way, so that these like corporate powers don't control the narrative of the future.
Yeah.
It's almost like, if they build the system, the system might, you know, end up in the same end state that the decentralized system will end up in. But I would rather just make sure that we're as decentralized as possible.
Yeah. Brilliant. So next time we'll talk about decentralization, hyperstition, and particularly get more into distributed AI. I'm really excited to talk about that next time. How can my listeners find out more about you and what you're working on?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Aiden Soloran. That's one way. Hollium Corp on Twitter as well. I'll be floating around on Realm. So you can download that. We have test flight floating around. Just go to hollium.com, download that guy. But yeah, try those things out. And then very soon we have some really exciting announcements in terms of what's next for Hollium, specifically around, you know, how we're going to tap into decentralized AI. So.
Very cool. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Stuart Alsop III, Also, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or iTunes for every weekly episode that I publish on Monday mornings. Hope you have a great day.